ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनमपि शचीपुत्रमात्रस्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रमुरुपुरीं माथुरीं गोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिकामाधवाशम् प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथितकृपया श्रीगुरुं सन्नतोऽस्मि। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतः परकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं सागरजातं सहगणरघुनतन्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवम् श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता शिवशाखान्वितांश्च। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। An important aspect of pilgrimage is parikrama, circumambulation, and my series of talks are also a bit going back and touching things which have been touched before. So I'll start this talk by what's well, already started. Gange cha Yamune chaiva Godavari Saraswati Narmada Sindhu Kaveri Jale smin sanidhim kuru. The prayer for calling the seven most sacred rivers of India enumerates their names. I've spoken about holy places on the bank of the Ganga, among, oh, there are so many. I spoke some of them. On other rivers, the Narmada, I mentioned also, yeah, Bhrigu Kach, and I didn't mention the, I got the names of the, at the headwaters. That's the where the river begins. The Amarakantaka and Triambaka. Triambak, that's famous in Maharashtra as a place of Lord Shiva. So is Amarakantaka. So Amarakantaka is the at the head of the Narmada, and Triambak, Triambakeshwara of the Godavari. Godavari River rises in the west of India and heads east and meets the sea in the east. And Narmada, most of the big, actually all the big rivers, they start on one side, the biggest rivers of India, they all start on one side and end up on the other side. That's how they get big, by going a long way. The Kaveri here in Tamil Nadu, as it's known. It used to be known, the area used to be known by the names of the kings, right? The Cholas and the Pandyas and the Pallavas. It was the kings were important, not the language they spoke. And of course there's so much Telugu as up to the present day. It's not exclusively a Tamil speaking area. So anyway, along the Kaveri, we have, anyone can think of any holy place along the bank of the Kaveri? Srirangam, Srirangapatnam, Kumbakonam, and there are so many. Some of the names, Tiru something or other. Okay. You know, you can pronounce it all. I'm not so very good at this. So of course, Srirangapatnam's in what is now, used to be Mysore state, but that's now in Karnataka. And then the rivers, they're almost all females. Not all. There is a word in Sanskrit. Nadi is the common word for river. And there's also the word nada, which is a male river. Brahmaputra, one of the great rivers of India, obviously by the name, is a male. And the Shona River, which is in Bihar, flows into the Ganga, is also a male. So the main rivers, they flow to the sea, and they are the wives of the sea. We know that Sri Ram, when he went to the place which is now known as Setu Bandha, because the bridge was made there. Setu means bridge. And it's a little different. It's different to a ford, isn't it? Ford is where you can cross without assistance. And a bridge means you go over by walking or whatever. And bandha means, which in this context means it was placed there, fixed there. So he, Lord Rama, he became angry with the ocean, who then appeared, the deity of the ocean. But I'm just wondering which one, because in Puranic law, we have Mahodadi on the eastern side, and Ratnaka, they're different seas, and you can actually see at Setu Bandha the two seas, they mix there. They're different, so exactly who came, I'm not sure. But of course on the sea coast, all around the sea coast of this sacred land, there are so many holy places. If we start from the east, the sun rises in the east, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda arise in the east. Civilization begins from the east. So then the first one we have is Ganga Saga. And there are various, what we might call minor holy places, but then the next big one as we go along the coast east, and then we have to go south, is Puri Dham. And then the Setu Bandha is there. Before that, we have just south of Chennai. What's that called? Mahabalipuram, which was also holy place. But the Setu Bandha is a major holy place. And then I guess you can, Tiruchendur, holy place of Murugan. And then we come down to Kanyakumari. And then we can go up the west side. And there are so many. But among the well-known ones, we have to go quite a way to Gokarna, place of Lord Shiva. And then as we go along, then we come to Somnath, Prabhas, Dwaraka. And plus all the sangams, where the wives, the rivers, meet the sea, they're also holy places. There are very special for bathing there, and especially at the Godavari Sangam. There's a huge mela. Kumbh Mela is very famous at Prayag, but lakhs, millions of people also attend that. That it's called the Pushkar Festival. That's held, I believe, also every year and every 12 years. It's very big. Then there are many mountains also, which are holy place, and of course the whole Himalaya range is known as Deva Bhumi. Gods live there. People who leave the world to seek out God, they generally go to the Himalayas. Of course Prahlad Maharaj, he wasn't so happy with that, because he said actually they should be They should do something to uplift the fallen people. The Himalayas are the famous holy places. The most famous, of course, are Badrinath and Kedarnath. Other mountains, well, there are so many. The Vindhyas, where are the Vindhyas? I was always wondering, where are the Vindhyas? I hear about the Vindhya mountains, where are they? You don't see any mountains in that area. I see a lot of rocks. Well, they were big, but then Agastya Muni tricked them into bowing down because they're getting too big. They're blocking the sunlight. So I told them to bow down and don't get up till I come back. And they're waiting still. He's been in South India a long time. We have also, north of the Vindhyas, on the eastern side is Neelachala, on the ocean also. We don't see, actually, in Puri. Neelachala means in Purushottam Kshetra, the whole area is a Kshetra, sometimes called the Shankar Kshetra, because it's shaped like a conch. So when we go to Puri, we don't really see a hill, but it is, especially if we see from a distance, you can see the Puri temple is so high. And it's not just because the structure is high, but it's on high land. So Neelachal is there. On the western side, we have in Gujarat, I mentioned that also, didn't I? That Girna, in Bhagavatam, that's called Raivataka Mountain, where Krishna and Balaram came. Jarasandha lit a fire all around and went away and thought, that's my job done, and Krishna and Balaram jumped off. How high is it? 90 miles high at the time. Then another mountain, Mount Arbuda, which is now known as Abu, and that's famous nowadays for Jains and for Brahma Kumaris. But that was previously a, or still is, can't remember which deity, but something. Then on the western side we have Govardhan, in northwest. If you travel, you can travel from the Yamuna, the Ganga, all the way, come to Vrindavan. The land's completely flat, and all of a sudden, there's this hill. How did that hill get there? It's not part of the local geological construction. Maybe the geologists have some way of explaining it. But whatever way they explain it, they'll be wrong, because they won't accept the actual fact that Govardhan, he came there by his own sweet will, being carried elsewhere, and decided he wants to stop here, because that's where he belongs. He's waiting for Krishna to come, perform his pastimes. any more famous hills in the south? Venkatachala. That's where the Lord lives on a hill. And many, especially in South India, so many temples are on hills, isn't it? And you have to climb up to get them. Pujari has to climb up every day. How many steps are there at Sholingur? It's more than 1,000 steps, isn't it? They go up twice a day, I guess. They go up and down. They walk up and walk down. Give the Lord rest at midday, come down again. Melukote, also hill, and then at the Palani, also. It's a hill, and there are so many hills and forests. And then there are caves. Know any deities in caves? Ever went to Mangalagiri? You remember? You have to go up, and then inside a cave. Nrisingha is there. He's always thirsty. You can feed him panakam, but he only takes half. Whatever. If you give one glass, he'll take half a glass. If you give a whole bucket, he'll take half a bucket. Parna Nrisingha, drinking Nrisingha. He's Nrisingha who likes to drink. Another Nrisimha deity, not so well known, is at Bidur, in which state's that? It's in Karnataka, isn't it? Karnataka must be. It's just in between. If you're on the train line, it's just, you're in Telangana now, and then Bidur, and then just after a short time, you're in Maharashtra. So there's a deity in a cave also, and you have to walk through the water to get there. Any others can think of? Anyone? I can think of one. Yadgiri Guta. The Lord is in a cave on the top of a hill. Any others? There you have again, cave, huh? Nrisingha in a cave. And Namakkal is also Nrisimha in a cave, manifested himself. Vyasa's cave. I was thinking of that. Vyasa Gufa. In Aholam also. Not all, but some of the seven Nrisimhas. And the down, when you first, the first one you go to is in a cave. I can't remember. It's a long time since I went. So there may be so many in holy caves also. At Chitrakoot, there's also a cave where you go into the source of the Godavari Ganga, they call that river. It's inside a cave. You can walk in, take darshan. And in Bidur, in Nrisingha, in a cave also, you have to walk through water. There's always water there, always water flowing to reach there. So like that. In Bangladesh, I never visited, I heard there's a cave where there's flame is always burning on the water. So it's Agni temple. I never went there. Oh, a very, very big one, which I haven't visited, in the Himalayas, in Jammu, that is Vaishno Devi. Anyone visited there? Anyone here? No. You visited there. Somehow I thought you must have visited there. You visited there also, huh? Very dangerous to even go there. It's dangerous in the sense that it's a very narrow path and you can slip off and you have to have enough strength. It's an arduous path and it's high, so people lose their breath also. Then there are whole cities which are holy places. Traditionally, there are the seven moksha puris, and they're all in the north except one. Ayodhya, Mathura, Maya. Maya here means Mayapur, which means Haridwar. Ayodhya, Mathura, Maya, Kashi, Kanchi. Kanchi is in the south. Avantika, Puri, Dwarakavati, Chaiva, Saptaite, Moksha, Dayika. Seven cities. Which are Ayodhya, Mathura, which is the best of them, Haridwar, Kashi, Varanasi, Kanchi, Avantika, nowadays called Ujjain, Puri, Dwarakavati, or Dwaraka. These are the seven places, which especially if you die in them, then you attain moksha, just by dying there. All you have to do is die there. You don't have to do anything else. And even by visiting and one advances on the path of liberation, and there are places where holy people like to live. And there are other cities which have come up due to the deity, that which I mentioned, especially Nathdwar is a very good example. The only thing in Nathdwar is Srinathri. That's the whole purpose of the city. And Tirupati has grown up at the foothills of the Venkatachala, and of course the deity is there also of Govindaraj, is it not? And then just a little distance from there, there's another important holy place of Lord Shiva, which is called Kalahasti. Yeah, I was forgetting. Yeah, well, there are so many. I mean, I'm just mentioning some of the major holy places. And if you consider that within a radius of the whole area of any holy place, it's also part of the holy place, then practically everywhere there are holy places. And wherever a Vishnu temple is established, or a Shiva temple, or any temple, not Sai Baba temple, wherever Shalagram is worshipped, if one dies within such and such a distance of Shalagram, one achieves liberation. So practically the whole land is sacred. And the culture that used to be going on and still is going on to some extent, that also makes, even if one is not specifically in a holy place, that culture makes the whole land purified. And especially some holy place, yeah, some the holy places themselves. It's just like in Vrindavan, you have the famous holy places, and there are dozens of the well-known famous holy places. In Varanasi, there are holy places. There are dozens of well-known holy places, but everything in between is also completely pure and sacred. So that is a great gift of living in this sacred land, but one has to connect with the culture. It's something that the potency is there, one has to connect with it. Just like the electric socket is there, one has to connect with it. And you have to put on the switch, and the device that you plug in has to be in working order. So there are some terms and conditions to utilize that. But if one knows how to utilize it, one can get so many benefits. Of course, living in Puri, for instance, even if you don't do anything, it's just like living in Vrindavan. It's hardly possible to live in Vrindavan without being affected by the Krishna consciousness of the place. And when everyone around you is a devotee, then you're also, you can't avoid it. You're naturally swept up by that. So naturally the people of Vrindavan have feelings for Krishna. Braja Bhashya Loke Sahaja Krishna Priti Gopale Sahaja Priti Braja Bhashya Prati. Something like that. There's a verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita in the narration of Madhavendra Puri that the people of Vrindavan, they naturally have loving feelings for Krishna, and Krishna naturally has loving feelings for them. Now, I was saying even in between the places are holy, and how is that? Well, in between the holy places, so many holy people have traveled. So if you're on the road between, say, Kanchi and Kumbakonam, then so many Vaishnavas must have gone on that path previously. So you're literally following in the footsteps of great persons who have Vaishnava Kshiti Pavana. Pavanaha. The Vaishnavas, they purify the earth by their love for Krishna, by their calling out his names, by their desire to serve him, by their dedicating their lives to him. There are many, practically unlimited numbers of unknown holy people. People who may not have even been considered sadhu. They're ordinary people living at home. They go on pilgrimage, thinking of Krishna. And there are some more famous sadhus, but then they're also forgotten in due course of time. And then some very famous sadhus, the great acharyas who are remembered over many centuries, they all went on pilgrimage, they all visited these places. One reason why the acharyas, Shankara, Ramanuja especially, and then others in their lines, they went to holy places, one of the reasons they went was to preach. And for them, preaching meant to meet the pundits in different places, because the big pundits, the pundits will be in every village, not every village, but in every area. There'll be brahmanas, villages or areas. But the big ones, or the most famous ones, tend to live in holy places. Either they're born there, or they go to study there, or they stay there, or they go to teach there, because holy places are traditionally places of Vedic culture, which is based around the Vedas, and that means the recitation of the Vedas, and explanation of the understanding that goes with the Vedic knowledge. So generally you'll get big scholars in important holy places. For instance, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Puri, he met Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who was renowned as the greatest pundit of the day. He was living in Puri. He wasn't born there, he came from Bengal. Navadvip itself was a place of learning. So many people, so many of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's father and mother and so many others came from East Bengal. They went to Navadvip because it's a place of learning. And also the kings and wealthy people, that means Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, they would sponsor people. They would support them so they could live and study and not have to go to work and do some job or something. There was not thinkable that Brahmins could do some work for anyone. It was required of rich people to support the Brahmanas. If you have money, then you have to do that. That's part of Vedic culture. You just can't keep it all for yourself. You're required to give charity, and charity in Gita, three kinds of charity are described, so in goodness, passion, and ignorance. So in mode of goodness means one has to give to brahmanas. And of course the attitude, it's possible to give to brahmanas with a wrong attitude. One shouldn't even think, I'm giving. You should think simply, it's my duty so that I can become purified. So they would congregate in holy places, and for worshipping the Lord, they would in holy places, especially the most learned brahmanas. They want good brahmanas who are practicing well, who know the shastra previously. Pujari, generally we have Brahmana pujaris, but they often don't know that much. Here in South India, it's not like that, but in North India, generally the pujaris, they don't know anything. They don't need to know anything. They just need to do their mantras and wave things around, and that's it. Years ago, it's somewhere, I think it was Vishakhapatnam or Vijayawada or somewhere, There was a young man, he was doing some puja, reciting so many mantras, and then afterwards I asked, because I thought it was very nice recitation, so I asked him, what do those mantras mean? He said, I don't know. I don't need to know. I just need to recite them, that's all. That's like the Kama Mimamsa Vada. You don't have to understand anything. There's no question of philosophy. You just perform the Vedic rites as it's said, and you'll get the benefit. You'll go to heaven. What's all this philosophy? Forget it all. Just do it. Do it as you're told, and you'll get the result. So Shankar and others, they visited holy places to meet with the pandits there, because Prakashananda Saraswati was the guru of 60,000 sannyasis. You may say, that's a lot. It must have been a big ashram. 60,000 sannyasis. But it doesn't necessarily mean they were all staying there with him. But even now you'll find people who'll go to a famous sannyasi and they'll ask to take sannyas, and then they'll take sannyas from him because he's reputed, and then they'll move on somewhere else. Taking blessings, or he may spend some time studying, and then he'll go on his way, because generally sannyasis, they keep on moving, although they may stay in a holy place. So if you can convert, which means defeat in debate, a big pundit, then you get so many. Because if he's defeated, then all his disciples have to come with him. And we find in the histories of Shankara, he was going place to place and debating at Mahishmati, that's Omkareshwar on the Narmada. He met with, Mandana Mishra? Was it Mandana Mishra or Kumarila? No, first he met Kumarila Bhatta, and then said, I can't talk with you because I'm burning myself to death slowly, so you go and meet my disciple there. So defeated him, and then the Mandana Mishra became his disciple. Similarly, we find Madhva, so many debates with Buddhists and others, and Ramanuja in Melukote, debating with the Jains, defeating them. So for this reason, they would go. There's one major reason why they visited holy places, and then they would, of course, purify the place by their coming. Although when Shankaracharya entered the Mahishmati, then no one wanted to see him. They thought it's very inauspicious, a sannyasi has come. They weren't Muslims. They were Hindus. And in those days, the word Hindu wasn't there. But according to their understanding, you have to follow karma, and taking sannyas means you left all karmas. So they think to follow the path of karma is very auspicious. So anyone who leaves that is very inauspicious. And if you see a sannyasi, you become polluted. That's what they thought. So it's difficult for him to get an appointment for a debate. But eventually he did. Okay, I'll stop there because I have a... I'll go into another section. Oh, one thing I'll say now, important thing to say. Oh, maybe I don't, yeah. One important thing to say is that we find in Mahabharata, in Srimad Bhagavatam, Mahabharata, we have the Pandavas traveling throughout India, at least through a large portion. And although there's a description of many holy places in the south, they didn't travel much in the south, it seems. But there are descriptions of places in the south. Srimad Bhagavatam, we have Balaram visiting the holy places all over India. And then again, more recently, Shankara, Ramanuja, Madhva, and then Nityananda, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, traveling widely. So it seems that that wasn't so uncommon. It's not a new thing that people go from one part of India to another to visit holy places, and especially sannyasis would do that. Although, of course, the Pandavas and Balaram, they were not sannyasis, but in the case of the Pandavas, they had time. They had to spend 12 years in the forest. Well, they're not one forest, there are forests. Most of India was forests at that time. And so they visited holy places. They visited so many holy places. You may say a holy place is not a forest, but then a little, because it's transcendental, like they're going from forest to forest. They took that opportunity to visit so many holy places. And Balaram, he was a Grihastha, but he had to superficially do a prayaschitta, atonement for having killed a brahmana? No, not a brahmana, but an acharya, more than a brahmana. And also that at the time of the Kurukshetra war, the kings and armies were called from all over, north, south, east, west. East is Cambodge, nowadays Kampuchea. West, we have from Kandahar, now called Kandahar, where Gandhari came from, Shakuni came. So there was travel throughout India, and it was known. People in Kanyakumari knew that there are the Himalayas, there's the Ganga, they knew. And people in Kashmir knew that there is Kanyakumari. And there was regular contact between them, because the sannyasis would travel, and some traders would travel also. So just one widespread travel was there. So just one observation about that, you could say it's somewhat a social or maybe political observation, this idea that the British united India and made it into one country, but it was all, conceptually it was all there. They didn't think that someone going from what we nowadays call Tamil Nadu to Himalayas. Yeah, they know they're going to a different, but they didn't think of it as being a completely different place, because the language, local languages were different, but the linked language is Sanskrit. And it's the same culture, same understanding. And they were new. Someone came from, sannyasi came from Tamil Nadu to Badrik Ashram. It's not there. Everyone go, who's this? You know, they're just, they're expect. They see so many. Regularly people come. Of course, it was Shankara who revived the worship at Badrik Ashram, which had fallen into us. It was not going. He revived that. And still they speak, the Nambudaris up there, they're still Keralite priests up there. They see how they maintain their tradition over generations. Shankaracharya, that means 1200 years ago, and still the same people he put there, their descendants are doing the worship. And they still speak their own language. So this idea that India was this Aryan invasion theory and all that, all rubbish. It's there used to be a slogan during the time of Indira Gandhi, during the emergency. She put slogans all over the country. I don't think any of you would remember that. One of them was, from Kashmir to Kanyakumari, India is one. Yeah, she didn't really need to put that. The British made this thing of separating India, which it already becomes somewhat separated politically, and then the eastern side became Buddhist, that once we start in Burma, Brahmadesh. Burma is Brahmadesh. That's the Puranic name. Where did this name Burma come from? Brahmadesh. Siam, Thailand, is Shamodesh. So, it's, and we have, going right up into Central Asia, we have Uzbekistan. That stan is absolutely a Sanskrit word. Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, there are so many. Kazakhstan, Tatarstan, that's going up into Russia. Bashkortistan, there are so many. Stans. It's all coming from the Vedic culture. So what should we do? Make all the world one? Krishna stan. And what will we do? Make Narendra Modi the king? We don't talk about politics here, but Prabhupada did throughout his books, again and again and again. I just read yesterday how Prabhupada was saying we need kings, not democracy. A pious king like Yudhishthira is so much better than democracy in which people who are less than animals, they vote for some big animal. Prabhupada had a social and political agenda. We're going to establish Krishna consciousness all over the world, and we're not going to have genes and drugs and intoxication and slaughterhouses. You sort of have to take control of the situation. Anyway, that's another subject. Prabhupada said, make the whole world India. And he didn't mean by that Bollywood India. He meant Vedic culture India. So it's a great job we have ahead. Prabhupada established so many holy places all over the world. So from those holy places, gradually the holiness should expand and expand and expand. Until there's nothing left in America and Australia, only Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Shri Shri Gauranitai ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Vancha kalpa tarupyascha kripa sindhu vivacha. Patita nam pavane bhyo vaishnave bhyo namo namaha.